You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Well, hey, and welcome to this week's FX PhD. It is July 32nd, 2008, or something like that. I'm sorry, that's a reference to my botching the calendar thing last week in the update. Hey, Mike, how's it going, my friend? Sorry,
July.
I've had a little too much latte. In all seriousness.
Oh, no. I had to be sick on a day where John's had too much latte.
I'm sorry to hear you're sick and at least under the weather a bit.
I'm sick and under the weather a bit.
And that is not a good place to be in. Not hungover, are you?
No, I'm not bloody hungover. Sick, as in dragged myself out of my sick bed, drove in sick in my car so I could come here and be insulted by you on our sick podcast. No, I'm just joking.
Oh.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. Hey, sorry, I didn't mean to sit down.
It's all right. No, it's all good. You're feeling under the weather, lashing out. So what's been going on, man?
I wish I was hungover. I don't know. We just had a long weekend, which was good, I guess.
A long holiday? Was it a public weekend or something, or a public holiday?
Yeah, we seem to have so many of them. Yeah, we just had one. And it was, I don't know what it was for. It was the Queen's birthday or celebration of somebody something. But anyway, whatever it was, Monday was a non-event. But that's all right. I had fun.
I hear that checked out a recent effects release. Didn't you see the, what was it that you saw? I saw on your Twitter feed.
Oh, I went and saw Narnia.
Oh, Narnia.
Narnia 2. It's Caspian.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. I thought it was really good, actually.
I actually went into even the first one not expecting much at all, you know, and just if you take it for what it is, it was a really enjoyable film and actually kind of looking forward to seeing the second one.
Yeah. In all seriousness, wow, I mean, you know, joking aside for a second, I actually heard last week on like about Tuesday a lecture by Chris Edwards of The Third Floor. Do you know The Third Floor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't know them really, I must admit. I kind of knew of them, but I just didn't know them that well. And so Chris was out here lecturing about their activities and went into a lengthy discussion on Narnia because they previewed pretty much the whole thing. And it was fascinating. I mean, it was so fascinating that when I went and saw the film, we grabbed the original book and then started going through various scenes looking at the original written word and comparing it to what we'd just seen in the cinema and then realizing the contribution that Third Floor had made. Yeah, so it was interesting because, you know, if you read the book and you see the film, I don't normally bother going back to the book, but because I'd seen the lecture, I did actually go back to the book and sort of reread sections. So I don't want to give away the plot, but there are a couple of killer characters, and I was like, well, that was really well done, and the concept art on that was just amazing. I wonder what they had to work with. And we'd go back and reread it, and I was like, oh, okay, well, that was interesting. That was a, you know. And in a couple of cases, there were quite significant changes. Well, how about this? They weren't plot points in the sense of a traditional character arc. They were huge visual effects differences, you know, whereas character A would hit character B over the head. In the film version, you know, character A would summon the wrath of, you know, whatever and defeat character B in a more cinematic style. So, so it's pretty interesting. And also the other thing that was interesting about Chris's discussion was just the current discussions going on between the VES – the art directors, and I'm sorry, I've lost it. The art directors' society is what? Do you know what the art directors' society is?
I don't actually. Sorry, no.
It's funny. It's art directors is like a group I respect a lot. Obviously, there's no problem with them whatsoever. I think they're great, but I just don't actually bump into them much. You know what I mean? Bump into them on set, but I don't certainly bump into the art directors' society per se. Anyway, they have a society, and somebody, please put me out of my misery and tell me what it is. I think it's something like the Art Directors Guild, but I could be wrong. Anyway, it was the VES, the ASC, as it is in America, and the Art Directors Guild trying to agree on what the heck previous was and where it sat in the film chain and what it did. And he was discussing that. He was discussing post-viz, of course, because post-viz is now a big deal in terms of, you know, doing rough VFX shots so that they can do something in the edit.
Right.
And it's in a film like Narnia where you've got lots of digital characters, lots of, you know, stuff that doesn't play well on green screen. And there's one scene, which I actually think is one of the better ones in the film, that he described how the studio was actually going to axe the whole scene because they had a bunch of guys standing around going, whoa, you know, to nothing, right?
Yeah.
And the studio was like, this is so lame. And they're like, yeah, because we haven't put in the whole CG thing and the whole, you know, everything is like with the CG thing is going to be everything. I'm trying not to give away the plot here.
Right.
And anyway, so they just had to get in there, boots and all. And so they actually took their previous and comped the live action plates into it. Yeah, so it wasn't that they were post-vising. They were literally just said, look, here are our previs. Let's replace the little digital guys in the foreground with the previs, and then you'll – sorry, with the live-action plates, and then you'll get to see what's going on. And it suddenly went from a couple of guys standing in front of a green screen going, whoa, to, oh, my God, that is so cool. And, of course, it stayed in the film.
Yeah, that's really interesting. We loved it. They were actually on the panel. I actually forget who
– I thought it was
on the panel from their last year at VES. I thought someone from the third floor was on there.
Yak Films, Yak, you know, and
it had PLF, Pixel Liberation
PLF,
front. Yeah. Or maybe potentially afterwards I ran into someone from the third floor, but I remember talking to those guys. And I think we had it as part of the Background Fundamentals. Did we do previous?
Well, we had that course, yeah.
So I think it might have been part of that course. But it really fascinating, interesting part of the business. It's become incredibly critical, actually, in the process, you know, and the type of budget, the type of stuff that they're doing, and type of integration with finishing. So,
well, one of the other really cool things is that Chris actually opened up a Maya file and actually went through how he had his Maya file set up so he could actually see one of his shots that he prevised for a film that I think has not been greenlit. So I certainly haven't seen the film. And it was for – now, who's the guy that directed Superman? Superman Returns? Singer? I'm sure it's Singer, right?
Sorry, I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, like he also was on the he's the executive producer of House. Brian Singer. I'm sure it was Brian Singer.
Yeah.
Are you IMDBing it?
I am. I am, actually.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's Brian Singer. Okay, let's say it's Brian Singer because it's not
a for sure.
Story.
Yeah, for sure.
So they did the previs of his this shot, right? And so what was interesting about it is that, okay, well, I kind of knew how to do that, obviously. But then they were like, okay, now because it was Brian Singer, we did this. And there's a really great tip to pass on to everybody. They were like, when they're doing previs for a director, they go and rent all their student films. Not their recent films, but their student films, right? Because the theory is in their student films and their earliest first release, they're not restricted by the studio, so they do what they want to do. They do the shots that they like. And then when they present the shots, if there's some cinematic aspects to that, like big things in the foreground out of focus that they just liked a lot in their student days, they put all of that in the previs. And then the director's like, yeah, I really like that shot. It's like, well, of course you would. It's based on your style kind of thing.
Right. But interesting, yeah.
And then in his case, they not only did that, but they had this great Mel script where they could swap in and out any actor's face in the previs to any one of the models. So you sort of build the whole thing, obviously with cycles and stuff, and then you go, oh, no, that isn't the guy. That's now the other guy. And then they just press a button and it flips around and it puts his face in. All the same animations inherited, all of the same costume is inherited, everything else. And then they have a second set of buttons for costume, right? And so you might be like, sort of dial in guy B. Actually, make that guy C.
Yeah.
Now dial in, making him an officer, not a, you know. And so they can just do that really, really quickly. And so he worked up a whole scene on how he does it, like from, you know, basic blocking and one thing I hadn't, I guess, thought of because I don't really think this one. I'm not a hardcore previs artist. Is that they block the entire scene in stills first, because unless they've got the blocking right with the characters posed but not moving, they can't kind of work out camera angles and stuff, and then they build to that. So
in reference kind of to the similar what you do in your drawing boards then, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going. Yeah, you're exactly right, John. That's it. And so it was just fascinating, you know, hearing somebody at that level talking, because you know what I'm like, I always just hate it when they kind of dumb stuff down, and this was the exact opposite of that. Now, of course, it was a VES function.
Right.
So, you know, you'd expect a fairly high caliber, but I thought Chris did a great job, and his discussion of and I guess the third thing for PhD people is that, by definition, they don't use any proprietary tools. They just tend to use Maya and Motion Builder because they're the most common things that the effects houses will use to do stuff. They use a lot of cards for explosions and smoke and stuff. They buy model libraries. You know, it's all very much canned effects, and there's sort of nothing, you know, as opposed to where you were talking about something like a modern, pick a film kind of thing, right? Speed Racer, it's all proprietary, right?
Right.
This is the exact opposite. They almost like they go to great lengths to only use 8 lights in Maya. They can play blast it. No, it's nothing special. No plugins. No U-Boot clever things.
Because it's so about it's a, the it's a, yeah. Because isn't it? It's about the end result, right? It's about being able to finesse the angle, the timing, the other stuff in it. Not, you know, what's going on. Well, a little bit effects-wise, but right. You need to be. You just really need to concentrate on the content.
But they're going to hand it over to somebody else, right? And so if they view something proprietary, that just doesn't work. They have to be as simple as possible so that they can hand it on to an effects house. And one of the great jobs they do is handing these shots on to effects houses with kind of, well, okay, we've kind of worked out the beats for you, so here you go kind of thing, as opposed to just saying, well, you're going to spend a lot of time even working out where the director likes stuff. It's kind of like, these are the beats. And then they did both. Obviously, they did the sort of previews where you work out a motion control.
Yeah, so I was going to say, there's even some of that in there where you're actually coming up with the move.
Oh, totally. But then they also do the what I call Steven Spielberg, just get the beats down and I don't care where the camera goes kind of thing. But they only use real cameras. They always talk to the DOP to find out what set of lenses he's going to use. So they only have a frame up on the lenses that that are possible on the day, that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I think, pretty interesting, really.
I think it's a very interesting process, and also how that influences in post down the line as well. I think the people who are doing the final compositing are actually working more and more closely with the people who are doing the previs now whenever possible, just so that you don't get painted into a corner in the end. So really, really interesting. So John Noel was, it was interesting in the conversation about how closely they end up working, because they have to, because if you're going to spend, the idea is to save money. So you're spending less time on set, less time in post, and you need to make sure you get it right in previs. So it's a fascinating bit of part of the industry, I think, that's don't often think about getting a job in previs.
It's a really interesting area, yeah.
I think it'd be really interesting. It's always interesting, though. I love finding out about little things like that. I kind of knew it went on. I mean, we've done really incredibly rudimentary previs on stuff myself for some commercials, nothing to the level that these guys are doing or worrying about. But I think, like you, find it really interesting finding more about some kind of tangentially or very related aspect of the industry that I don't know anything about. And that was one where I really came away from the VES festival last year out in Los Angeles going, I really enjoyed that session.
Yeah. Did you know that Steven Spielberg actually directed a bunch of stuff in the third final Star Wars film?
I did not, no.
Apparently, yeah. What's he asked that? Lucas, you know that opening space battle and stuff?
Yeah.
A bunch of that was Steven Spielberg. Like, he said, I want to direct some Star Wars stuff. And they said, yep, go for it. And he showed what he called the Spielberg doodles, which were said they have very, very few George drawings. Some of them actually done on napkins because they get to him and George Lucas in his lunch break. But they have the Steven Spielberg doodles, right? And it's so funny because they had to actually write a code because these doodles are just doodles. And he kind of did a sort of visual.
I saw those. Yes, definitely. Yeah, they are. They're really crude.
And they were like, okay, what do you think that is? And it's like, I think that guy's swinging in. No, no, it's a spaceship. No, no, I think it's a rope. No, no, it's the path the spaceship goes on.
But what was funny about that, though, and I don't know if they saw it, but some of them, I think, must have been that, because I remember looking at them, and once you understand what's going on in the scene, it's like, it's incredible, actually, how close the sequence ended up to the doodles was, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That was amazing to me. I was just like...
But you know what? I mean, if Steven Spielberg gave me a doodle, I'd do what I wanted.
No, exactly.
Steven, that's what you want, mate. I'll make them do that. No, not a problem.
Yeah, really interesting stuff, so...
So what else has been happening up in your end? How's the new digs going?
Oh, actually, things are going great here. It's amazing how much detail and work there is to have to pay attention to just being even tangentially involved with these guys here at Hootenanny. There's just so much stuff to take care of and worry about, make sure things are working and so forth.
You do realize that Hootenanny is an incredibly funny name for a facility, don't you?
I do. Do you know where that came from? Well, it's actually in a I'm not sure if we talked about it.
I thought it was
before,
for an episode of what?
Well, you know, so you remember I used to go to the Old Town School of Folk Music and do the guitar lessons.
I thought it came from an episode of Dukes of Hazzard.
Kind of, yes. It does relate to that, but it's actually so it's folk music, Old Town School folk music. You know, John Prine went there, a lot of really famous, really good artists, and obviously focusing on folk music. And at the, so you go there, and say my class, my guitar class was from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. You go for 2 hours and do your class in a group. I did group lessons. And at the end of it, everyone from all the classes gets together in the auditorium, and they put music up on an overhead projector, and we all play together. So whether it's guitar, you know, cello, whatever, everyone just gets down and play, and they call it the Hootenanny. So just a bunch of people getting together, and a bunch of people getting together, having fun, playing music together in an auditorium. And it runs the gamut, right, from your introductory beginner level all the way up to the, you know, advanced, really good people. Who actually know what they're doing, unlike me. But yeah, Liz and I took lessons there with me, and her husband Tim teaches there, and we were just sitting around and go, what about Hootenanny? Kind of joking, and then we started, yeah, that's how it came to be. So anyway.
It's a good name.
It is. It's kind of an irreverent name, right?
And it doesn't have the word digital in there.
It doesn't have, or post.
Or post.
And I don't think it sounds as pretentious as some places. You know, there are certain places that sound, you know, you try too hard with a name, I guess, or something like that. And we've had this discussion before. I think you might have even had it in the background about picking a name or whatever. And eventually it's what you do with the name that ends up defining you, you know, like tomato.
So I will say spelling it for web URLs is an issue.
Yes, yes. This one's borderline for me a little bit pushing that and thinking about the name. But it is spellable, and it's a dictionary name. And so it's not like resonates.
It's not like a word like film that if you do a Google search on it, you will never find the company because, you know what I mean? Like if you did Hootenanny and anything to do with the visual effects industry, editing industry, or film industry, you'd probably find it. You know what I mean? Because that's the other problem I have. If you pick a generic word.
Actually, if you go Hootenanny Mike Seymour, believe it or not, it comes up.
What?
Number one. Kidding? No, I'm not kidding.
Okay.
Well, you get mentioned in all our press releases. So you include, yeah. So if you do a search of something that might be found on the web, that's actually how you end up finding them. But I'm working with them to increase their Googleage based upon some of the experience that I've had doing the FX Guide and FX PhD stuff. So we're working on that little bit by little. But honestly, some of that stuff becomes priority wise. What's most important? Making sure that I can lay off to videotape okay? For the current client who's, you know, finishing this week, or, you know, adding a blog to their website. So some of that stuff's gotten pushed off a little bit. It's all one of those hours in the day kind of thing. But anyway, yes, Hootenanny Mike Seymour, number one.
So how do you spell Hootenanny?
Hootenanny.
Hang on.
Yeah, Hootenanny by itself does not come up.
Yeah, who'd want?
Hootenanny. Hootenanny.
And Mike Seymour. This is going to be fun.
So, anyway.
You're right. Hootenanny comes up. Hootenanny.tv. I am stunned.
Yeah, it comes up better than the Hootenanny edit. It comes up with better than Hootenanny post. But Hootenanny Mike Seymour, hey, number one. So. Probably John Montgomery would work too, though I didn't. I thought it was kind of more fun that it was you. So anyway,
so what's going
things
on?
Things are going well.
In the lobby, they're a bit frilly, aren't they?
What's that?
Those lights in the lobby on the homepage.
Oh, you'll love. Yeah,
they're a bit sort of frilly.
Frilly? Oh, they're beautiful.
Well, okay.
You'll see when you anyway. When you come here. But yeah, so anyway, we're doing that. I'm actually going to show a little bit more in this week's update. Show a little bit about some of the install in the machine room. I thought it might be interesting. Some people probably know, you know, some of the stuff we'll be covering. I mean, the idea of the update is just not to be totally hardcore and fully serious and super detailed like background, but I thought we'd kind of take more of some of the video routing stuff, show kind of what we hooked in and what we've got going now that we've got that all hooked up this last week. Thought that might be a little fun thing for this week. I've enjoyed doing those, by the way, other than my butchering of the calendar like I did this week. I like put someone posted in the forums, and actually Mr. Huser, within I think an hour of it being released, pointed out to me that there is no June 31st, so a date that I'd used in it. But
yeah,
I'm getting
whose guitar is that in the photograph on?
Graham's, one of the editors here. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. You're gonna have to
nice guitar.
We're gonna have a Hootenanny when you come. He can't play it.
He can't?
No.
What? Yeah. Is it just there for looks?
Yeah.
Is that a fender?
Is he having a laugh? What?
Is he having a laugh?
Yeah, it's just there for looks. He plays a rock band, not the real thing.
That's not good. Okay.
So, yeah, anyway. Hootenanny.tv.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that's been good. It's been really interesting, and it's been a good experience from the standpoint of keeping involved in production, also getting more involved back with the agencies and directors, trying to rekindle some of my relationships I used to have with some of the directors. It's been a good opportunity to do that as well. So it's been good. And like I said, maybe get a couple of these guys to line up doing a class for us in the future, a course for us in the future. I mean, that seems like an obvious link. So I'm going to have you do that when you come into town. Put the hard sell.
Yeah.
Get one of them to do maybe an Avid class finally or something for us, you know. They've only been doing it. Liz has only been doing it, you know, 12 years or whatever. I think she could probably handle it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Liz is great. I'd do anything to have Liz teaching. It'd be brilliant.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. So that's good. What else has been going on? Still working on the exam thing. Still working on the exams. It's actually been quite a bit of work, quite a really difficult process. I didn't, before we undertook it. And right now we've got it all laid out. It's just, we're going through and squashing all the bugs that come up when you get the feature in place and so forth. And, it's just taking quite a bit of time to, it's like you do one thing to fix one thing and then you get another bug. But my goal is to have, that done by the end of the week. So I'm kind of excited to show you more on that.
God, I can't wait to see that. Exams, I think, can be really good because for some people, I think there's, you know, a real sense of accomplishment from doing the stuff and getting the accreditation and stuff. And
Mark and I were talking about that today. Yeah.
No, totally.
He was saying that it's maybe not for everybody, but, you know, who knows on your resume? And I know, you know, we talked about a lot in the past, but it's like, you know, if someone who doesn't have that versus someone who does have that in their resume, you know, that can't hurt. You know, just getting a job. And as you point out, just even that idea for an individual feeling good about, hey, you know what? I got something out of it. And maybe even for us. I mean, look at it from our standpoint, too. What if everyone fails your exam? No, what if everyone fails an exam? Does that mean that we failed? And
teach it very well.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I think there are a lot of levels that's going to be good. So it's just, I know we've been talking about it for ages, and it seems like it's taking ages, and it is actually taking ages. But it's hard. I'm like,
something I want to talk about is the fact that there's two things I want to talk about, right? One is the whole concept of not repeating every course every term. Because we get more emails than Moses over. I don't suppose Moses gets many emails to tell you the truth, but anyway, get more emails than Moses over. You know, will this be repeated next term? And then the second thing we get is this whole thing about the 100 level, 200 level, 300 level thing, and what's going on, and the fact that we seem to have no new courses next term because on the calendar it doesn't have any new courses down, even though you have it in big red print saying this is just the courses we're repeating. New courses will be added in addition to this.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons, want me to cover the first one about why we don't repeat everything?
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of obvious to people who've been part of the site. It's some of the better classes, or at least from my standpoint, some of the more enjoyable courses at FXPhD are ones where you have a lot of participation in the forums. I find that having a certain critical mass or a certain number of people who are taking part of the courses helps lead to that, because you get, it breaks down pretty much in all the courses. A certain percentage of people are going to take part in the forums. A certain percentage are going to maybe do one or two posts, and then another percentage are just going to post nothing. And the less people you have, the less people we have interacting in the forums. And it just seems to me that the FXPhD experience, even though the training materials are the same, just the overall experience doesn't feel the same. It feels a little bit less when you don't have that kind of lively interaction between the profs and the members of the class. And the profs we have are, in general, hanging out in the forums. I mean, if we repeat a course, we make sure the professor is going to be able to answer questions. So, you know, people are there to do that. It's just that the participation for members isn't there because of hitting a certain number of people who aren't in the class. So we've been tinkering this, every term, haven't we? I think we go, well, let's try this number. Let's try and repeat this course. Let's try and repeat this course. And we've really found that giving a course a couple terms break really helps perception of the course and really helps make it a better experience for people who are taking the class. And bottom line, what we don't want to have happen is someone to join FX PhD, and if we repeat everything in the world, and, you know, there are very few people taking a course, it's just not going to be that great an experience for that person, and that's what we're trying to avoid. So that's the main reason, really, we don't repeat a course every term. I mean, there are some technical reasons, I guess you could say, but the bottom line is what we're looking at is making it a good learning experience for our members. And generally what we do with the 100-level courses is that's the one where we've kind of said, okay, we're going to take a different stand on the 100-level courses and run those just about every term so that someone who's looking to learn something or get up to speed something, there's at least an introductory course available for someone at the site for them. So you've noticed in the past we've had the Shake 101 and Nuke 101, Maya 101, Fusion 101, Synthize will probably fit that bill as well, where we try and keep those ones running every term and then cycle in and out of the 200 or 300 level courses. So,
yeah, and if we've removed a course, like we have this term, we removed the Shake 101 course, it's because we're reviewing it, redoing it, you know, basically giving it an update. Because sometimes, you know, for various reasons, we want to update a course, and that's the other advantage, right? We don't want to be putting out courses that are hopelessly out of date. So, you know, we may just pull a course, even though it was a good one, because it's now hopelessly out of date, and we just don't want you to sign up and, again, have a bad user experience because you go, well, this is all crap. This is all wrong.
Out of date even from the standpoint, I don't want to say like the Shake course, but I mean, I'll use Nuke as a good example, the Nuke 101 course. I was talking to Sean when I went out with him, and he was just really itching to redo the 101 course just because after doing that course, the 200-level course, the 300-level course, you know, for himself, he's learned a lot about how he can present the material in a better way for the members, right? It's not just that, you know, the software is out of date because it was, in fact, an old UI or whatever. But from his standpoint, he thinks he can do a better job at it, you know? So why not, you know? And Tal, probably the same thing. I mean, he feels like in looking at doing a new course, thinks he could probably, after having a number of terms under his belt doing courses for us, that was one of the first courses he worked on, and he's kind of itching to do a new version so it can be even better than the one that was in the past.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, there's that, and there's this, you know, general thing that we're kind of in this for the long haul, so we don't really want to be, I mean, it's just not about making money. Like, I know we could put out a whole lot of DVDs and kind of milk the market, but it's not what we're about.
Yeah, you know, yeah. That's I've gotten a couple emails from people because we're kind of at that cusp where we're just about ready to close membership for the term so that people can't join up for the April term anymore just because we feel it's not going to work out for them. We'd rather not take their money, make sure they have a better experience next term, and kind of keep them as hopefully that'll pay off by keeping everyone happy and they'll want to join and continue on in future terms as well. So I find myself telling people to not actually subscribe to our site. It's like, you know what? I actually think you should wait. You could do it this term and then also join next term, but I think actually, you know what, why don't you just go ahead and join next term? I think you're going to have a better response. So I think people are sometimes shocked that they get that response from us. It's like, nope, sorry, we don't want your money right now, right now.
Right now, exactly.
Right now. But it's true though. It's like the bottom line is, yeah, yeah. But bottom line is it's about having good experience. And same thing with why we limit the number of courses for people. You know,
yeah, tell me.
It's like same reason for that. So what was the other thing that you mentioned about the, what was the other question that you talked about getting, or did we just cover those?
I think we covered
why we don't have the 100, 200, and 300 for every, is it because we don't have the 100, 200, 300 for every app yet?
No, I don't know.
Oh, okay. All right. That's just because we haven't gotten around to doing them for.
I'm lost.
I thought you had brought up 2 points that we're going to talk about, but I may have covered it as one general. I was rambling so much that we lost that. But yeah, but anyway, excited about having the new courses coming up on announcing them fully on June 30th. Do you want to announce one before that?
You got in trouble about this last time, didn't you?
Well, I got in trouble for being a spoiler. I mean, not a spoiler about the new stuff, but a spoiler for saying. And then they laughed. Actually, in the forums, it was like, they were like, oh, yeah, John, way to go. Thanks, man. We want to hear about this stuff. And then they got mad because, like, 5 minutes later, I'm like, oh, yeah, go ahead and, oh, no, spill something, Mike. And you were like, I think you're right. okay, anyway. Yeah, I think we should.
Okay, let me just look at the board and work out what we're going to be spilling first.
Yeah, let me... should I chat you?
I think we should spill that we're doing a matte painting course.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that one's going to be... Yeah.
Because that one was one you haven't even hinted at.
No, that's a cool one. This is a new matte painting course.
Out of Europe, not out of China.
No.
Yep, brand new matte painting course. That will be, well, I guess it's it, the aim of the course is the establishing shot, right? So it's not strictly matte painting. It's more like concept art, matte painting, shot design, matte painting, if that makes sense. In other words, the number one place that you tend to want to go for the, quote, matte painting is the establishing shot because you want to give a big, epic shot. So
scale, yep.
Yeah, so it's rather than just say, oh, well, this is how I do matte painting, which could almost be a Photoshop course. It's more like, well, this is how we're going to make a cinematic shot. And then we did some really interesting things like playing with seasons, right? Well, this would be the establishing shot in winter, this is the establishing shot in summer kind of thing, you know, colors. So just a whole lot of things that that will give what you need to make the cinematic, you know, wow shot that is often the establishing shot. So it's really the art of the establishing shot, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, one of those kind of agnostic, application agnostic things. You can, obviously, paint will be critical in it. But I think it will be also just a lot of concept about light and what makes a shot. Like I said, the seasons thing, I think, is a great idea, Mike.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's a really great idea. And we're really enthusiastic about that course. There you go. There's our leak of the day.
The leak of the week.
The leak of the
week. We should have a musical sting for that. I'll have one next week.
Okay.
So we can have that. Sorry. I was just working on some graphics today. I'm tired of the swoosh. You know, the sports swoosh. You know how it seems like almost every replay graphic or every transitional graphic in a sports television show.
I designed the one for the Olympics that was...
Did it have a swoosh?
I did the swoosh for the Olympics in Sydney, and it was then used again in the Winter Olympics and the Summer Olympics that followed. It was the rings going past. Kind of, you know, because they developed these boxes to do it, but it couldn't use an additive key, so I had to work out a way of doing it. Quite complicated, actually. And,
designing graphics in the Stone Age. Yeah.
And we actually got it redone by Stuart in we got Stuart to do some 3D. But I spent a long time on what was a very small little wipe across frame with, you know, God rays and lens flares and everything that you'd want for a swoosh.
Sports swoosh. And of course the panning effect has to follow from right to left.
I gotta tell you, working for the Olympics is a fun thing, but there's nothing funner than being at Olympic events, like I was at, you know, whatever, men's 100 meters final, because we got really good tickets, obviously.
I am so hoping we get that here.
And they got on the Jumbotron, and there's like your swoosh every time that something happened. You know, like the basketballs with the America versus like Croatia or somewhere in 2000. And I don't know, women's hockey, because my wife loved it. And the only place I didn't see it was the beach volleyball, because beach volleyball didn't have a Jumbotron with swooshes playing. But all the other places, you'd be sitting there, and every time something happened, there you'd go, I did that.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I had that in that New Year's Eve show I did in ESPN, having my graphics up on the big board in Times Square on New Year's Eve.
Cool.
It was pretty like, yeah, okay.
You know, I'm going to look at the Olympic venues when we go up to China in a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that'll be good. I'm looking forward to that.
Actually doing photography on their architecture.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I loved my visit there. I was actually considering like just showing up there.
What,
I was talking
China?
To the guys in China. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, getting visas are kind of hard.
I was talking to Mark. Yeah. No, I was talking to some of the people there. I'm like, well, I was thinking just surprising them and like just being there when they showed up. And I'm like, I've got too much to do. I'm like, it would have been fun though. I miss China. I'd like to spend some more time, especially after you told me what you're going to do with the shooting the architecture. I think that's
good.
I think that's the survivor. that thing would be good. But yes, I lost my train of thought. It had to do with the Olympics or graphics. Anyway, I'm sure it's not that important, I guess. But yeah, Chicago actually is in the finalists, or semi-finalists, I guess, for the, what would it be, the 2016 Olympics. So
the 2016 Olympics? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll come stay, place.
Yeah, that'd be fun. So actually, it was really brilliant going down and seeing some of the pictures that you had. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure they will still be here in 2016. I'm like, I don't know, but we'll see if they even get it. But quite exciting news for the mayor of Chicago, Mayor Daley. So good things for here, and maybe good things for the post-production community as well, in the market, you know, actually to have that kind of, media. Did you get a lot of media coming into your post house, or was it all pretty much self-contained down at the sites?
Well, we were doing stuff for Sobo, right?
Yeah.
So, well, we actually set up a suite for Sobo. So they were doing, like, you know, tons and tons of stuff. We had an artist dedicated to just doing for, you know, extra work for, when I say Sobo, it's the Sydney Olympic Broadcasting Authority. So yeah, but the thing we found, of course, is that everyone and their dog pulled their advertising budgets to do ads around the Olympics, right?
Right.
So we were flat out doing ads to the Olympics, like, and yeah, big budget to that. Now, the week after the Olympics, you know, tumbleweeds blowing through the corridors.
Right. So that was related to your current, that was kind of related to your, the standard ad agency business that you had at your facility there, right? So
yeah. We had specialist work for the Sydney Olympic Authority, and then we had tons of advertising. Actually, it was the week of the Olympics. Like in Sydney, they basically said, look, don't even bother going to work during the week of the Olympics so that our visitors will think that Sydney has really good traffic, which is what happened. Right? So what happened is during the week of the Olympics, no one was on the roads. Everyone got time off work. Everyone could watch the events and therefore didn't want to go out. So it was just like, wow, there's really good roads in Sydney and you can get anywhere, right? And of course, everyone was really friendly and, you know, trying to help everybody out. It was a great spirit. I mean, I think one of the nicest things, and I know it was the same for, I know, Seoul with the World Cup, right? Like when you get a big sporting event in town and a country really gets behind it, then everybody just is nice. Everyone tries to be nice and, you know, it's kind of local pride. Like, right. I'm sure it's going to be the same in Beijing, right? Everyone will be really nice, on their best behavior, just proud of their city, incredibly proud to be, you know, so focused on the world stage. And it's just fun being in a major city that's holding a huge sporting event that's, you know, that wants to have it, if you know what I mean. Obviously, if you're in some places, they have sporting events which are kind of like, you know, have issues. Like there is obviously soccer hooliganism, yep, issues in some parts of the world, but I'm talking about like get a major sporting event where people want to be there and the city's really proud of having it put on. It has to be a huge event and the whole city just gets behind it. And it's just like you go, wow, couldn't we just be like this the rest of the year?
Well, you guys, you know, I think the Australians are just generally welcoming in general, but I know what you mean. I actually see Ram, you remember CE, who's with Imagineer now and yep, heading up that. Yeah, he said the same thing. He was in Atlanta during that time, and he said just an amazing the transformation that took place in the city from that standpoint. And he kind of said the same thing. He said basically that glow kind of continues for 12 months at least after the Olympics are over, but it does kind of decline little by little by little by little. You're back to your normal state, so. Anyway,
yeah, no,
I'm hoping for it to be kind of fun. So speaking of actually the soccer hooligans, I found it funny that the European Football Championships, the Swiss police had sent out 300 letters addressed to dear Mr. and Mrs. Hooligan.
What?
I just read this. I don't know, because you just mentioned soccer hooligans, is what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the organizers of the European Football Championship, literally, Swiss police sent letters to football hooligans warning them that no violence would be tolerated. So they sent up a bunch of letters that said, Dear Mr. and Mrs. Hooligan.
Like as a joke or as a tactic?
No, but serious. No, serious. As a tactic. I guess they buggered it up by saying Mr. and Mrs. Hooligan. So.
How weird.
Yeah. Anyway, kind of amusing. So, how not to? That would be the goes in the how not to do things column, I guess I would say. Okay. Well, I need to get to work. Back to work, I guess.
I need to start.
If you have anything
my day.
Additional to add today, this week.
No. Other than no.
I got nothing. So, as always, we say it every week, but thanks for being part of FXPHD. I just also want to say, I mentioned it in the weekly update, but it's been really fantastic, the response that some of the postgrads have had to potential members to PhD posting questions in the forums. The other members, our current members, have been really helpful in answering some of the questions, kind of making them feel at home. It's been pretty cool. So thanks again for that, guys. It's really helpful.
Really
hear
good.
Hear it from you guys versus us, as I said in the update. So, all right. Well, until next week, thanks for listening. As always, drop us a line in the forums. Follow our Twitter feeds, JohnMonFX, Mike Seymour. And we'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FXPHD.